Session number 3173, reel 2.
This is Conway Lloyd Morgan talking to John Worsley, Reel 2. Mr. Worsley, this little group of drawings in your possession are in fact the studies you made for the Salerno attack.
For this Salerno invasion force, this one here is simply a diagram of the layout of the ships and of the convoy.
And you made this up from the
From the briefing, and also, of course, it took a 4 days, I think. We sailed from Bizerta, I think it was, to Salerno, and during that time I was in the Roberts, right in the middle here, and I could, with field glasses, I mean, I could get the numbers of all the ships and so on, which I did, and laid out this, it's rather a scruffy little drawing, but it does show where the ships were. These are the escorts around here, destroyers, corvettes. These are, I think, minesweepers, landing ships, transports, LCIs, Roberts in the middle, various ships. But as I say, it's rather scruffy, but it does give you the information. This is a little drawing I made, sort of showing, really from that, how the ships were placed.
I see.
Were placed.
Mm. It's not actually, of course, from the Roberts, because the Roberts are
I was sitting in the middle there, but I thought it would make a painting, which isn't a good painting, which I think I will do it again one day. But it does show you what the ships were.
Yes.
That is Salerno Landing. Just the landing craft going in.
This is the sort of drawing that you'd have done.
Yes.
Actually, at the time.
There's
and I see there are little sort of scribbled notes like.
That's right. Yellow smoke.
Yellow smoke and GB. Green blue.
I suppose so. Green blue hill must have meant that. Yes. Shortly after ammunition dump explosion. That's the tail end of the smoke. Mm-hmm. Early morning. So yes, I did this. You can see the view from this. It's done from the director. Director of the Roberts, because I was sitting up the top. That's the same thing, a little note of the ammunition dump going up.
Mm-hmm. And the explosion did actually go up that high?
Yes, I've always tried to be completely honest, to not exaggerate anything, and it did. It was a most impressive sight, like that. Great mushroom, not as big as an atom bomb mushroom, but the same sort of shape. And of course these little chaps squirting out of it. Who were exploding in the mushroom head?
Oh, I see.
Mm. In addition, sort of subsidiary explosions. Once you see, there's still. This is all again little notes of the invasion force.
And these are just small drawings of some of the individual ships.
Of the individual ships, yes. Mm. That's a little assault ship. I don't know why it's there. These are assault landing craft along the side here, ready to be landed. These are escorts. Tiny little notes, as you see, I used to make. But they, yes. Today, I suppose people would take cameras. I never did. I just did drawings like that.
Fine. And these two rather more larger drawings are actually from rather later of the saboteurs.
This is after. After Salerno landing, I went back to Malta, and the front line was about in the centre of, right in the middle of Italy, right across the centre there. And I'd been told in my briefing from Admiral James not to sit on my bottom in Malta, I thought I'd better see what I can find that's going on. And I went up the east coast of Italy, up the Adriatic, as far as I could go, which was a little harbour called Termoli. And there I discovered all sorts of nefarious activities going on. There were agents being landed in the dead of night, and saboteurs and all sorts of things. And it was all being, I've discovered the centre of this was being organised by a fairly well-known gentleman called Rob, who draws fashions for the Daily Express. And he was sitting there and surrounded, and it was just a perfect casting. There he was in a sort of basement in Tullamore, in Termini, with a candle stuck in a saucer for the light, and surrounded by these weird saboteurs who were all, they looked like it too, and they were all well cast, the whole lot. And what we were doing, what I discovered was happening, was there was an MTB in Termini, and we used to run these people up at night, past the German line, up to a beach just south of Venice, at Chioggia.
And in fact, this...
That is Brian Rob.
On the right-hand side of this is Rob.
That is Rob, and these four here are actual Italian agents that are going to be there, and he's a bogus priest.
He was the one who insisted on you going back for his license.
Well, yes, I had to row him ashore in the middle of the night, frightened to death, row him ashore on this beach, Chioggia, and I thought I'd landed him and I could pull back to the MTB as quick as I could, and he said, "No, momento, my bicycle," and I had to go all the way back and get his bicycle and do it again.
And this other drawing of the pair is,
well, this is
on board.
This is on board. I think probably this is in the evening. We'd start off in the evening, just before sunset, and this is they were sitting on the deck, and of course as it got dark, then we got up into the more dangerous area. That was an American, I think.
And it was when you were working from Chioggia that you were, from Termini that you were captured.
Well, yes. What happened was some of these agents and people were contacting, at that time in the history of the war, there were about 2,000 ex-British prisoners that had been prisoners of the Italians. They were all loose in the hills of Italy and the Apennines, and they were living with farmers and so on. And the Italians released them, really, because they'd capitulated. And we would contact them. I wasn't personally, but I found this was going on. They were contacting these chaps. And the idea was to have a rendezvous at Chioggia Beach, I think it was the same place, one evening, and get the whole lot off across to Yugoslavia in one night, bang bang, with a MTB, do it fast, get them across the other side, and then bring them down south, down the Yugoslavia, and get them back that way. And they'd been contacted, and the rendezvous had been made, and I joined a party that was, I think there were one officer and five ratings, and we sailed in Italian fishing boats. There's a little drawing of one somewhere there.
That's a little sketch.
6th
of November 43.
That's right. Well, we sailed up in that thing there. Mm-hmm. There were two of us, two ships. This was this will be the other one, but they were both the same. And we sailed up these, and up as far as a little island called Lucien Piccolo, which is just south of Pola. And it's a lovely, beautiful sort of holiday resort, little bay, lovely place. And we sailed in there. The partisans were very suspicious of us, and they put us in a millionaire's house. I can't remember his name now. But anyway, the very plush house they put us in, and all these louts used to come in with their machine guns and sit on the best sofas and this sort of thing. Really an awful sight. But they were very suspicious of us, but they said we can make our base there. And the plan was to make this base here. That picture there is an example of the boat I was in. We were covered all over with these big jelly cans of high-octane petrol, which was we were sitting on, to refuel the MTB when it came up. The MTB was going to come up, and we'd have the rendezvous ready for them then. They could come up, fuel there, rush across to Italy in the middle of the night, bring these prisoners off, and then we could refuel them. We made our base, and as I say, there were only six of us, and one other, a writer, seven. There was a man called Guy Morgan, who was a correspondent. Well, actually, he was more a liaison officer for the press. He's since dead, but he was with us too. And unfortunately, the Germans who were cleaning up that coast. Put their program, they told us this afterwards, put their program on 1 week. And early one morning, they invaded this little island, and in our bay, early four in the morning, this invasion force. And there were only seven of us, and we sort of looked up in the drill book, what you do with a full-scale invasion. And we got our little rifles, and we stood smartly on the beach. And in actual fact, we did slaughter the first landing craft. It's rather sort of not very brave. We just sort of fired at them, and we did kill everybody in it. But they were coming in all round. And I've never been very proud of that, because, I mean, they didn't know we were there. But on the other hand, it's war. And they were coming in all round, so we legged it. We thought, well, there's no point in dying on the beach with five of us with landing stuff either side. So we legged it across the other side of the island, and we found a little diesel pleasure boat. And we got this going. And, of course, it was partisans were running too, and they climbed on board. It was packed with us and partisans and people, and we chugged across, hoping to get to the mainland. The Germans came over the hill after us, of course, and we were just out of range. They fired a bit at us, but they had any machine guns, and they couldn't hit us. We were too far away. But, unfortunately, we got out in the middle of the sort of sound there, and they came up. We had two big Arado flight planes, the black things. You probably, well, I mean, they're just a German aeroplane, but seaplanes. And they came down, they spotted us, and they sort of used us for target practice for about a quarter of an hour, and we were on fire, and wounded, and all sorts of things. I wasn't hit, fortunately. My friend Guy Morgan had a bullet through his arm here and broke his arm. But we really thought, you know, valour is all very well, but there's nothing much you can do about this. And so we put our little hands up, and thank God they stopped. And it was very, very messy, horrible business. But then they came along with a landing craft and picked us up. And that's how I was captured.
So, in fact, you'd been first in prison in Yugoslavia?
Well, yes. First real jail I was in was Ljubljana, and that was a civic jail. That was a real jail with clanking gates and warders with big keys and things. And then I was moved up. We were moved up by train and various lorries and things up to Berlin. In fact, Berlin, we were going, went through Berlin, the first 1,000 bomber raid on Berlin. And then on to Bremen and our camp, which was about 12 miles from Bremen.
But when you were first captured, did you still have any of your drawings on you?
Yeah, I did. I had quite a lot of them, yes. And some of these you probably saw. They have German markings on them because the Germans went through them very carefully. And there were one or two slightly unfortunate ones of the camouflage of our various big battleships and so on. But I don't think it really mattered very much. I mean, they were too big to worry about in any way. I mean, camouflage by this time really wasn't very important. Because, I mean, we had radar and things. Camouflage is rarely used, as you probably know, to divert gun sights. You don't know which direction the ship's going. Well, with a radar, you can tell that. It doesn't matter if it's camouflage or not.
And did they get suspicious about any of the other material you had on you?
Well, yes. I mean, they couldn't believe that I was... firstly, that I shouldn't have been in Yugoslavia anyway. And they didn't believe I was a war artist. They thought that was a lie, and assumed that I was a spy of some kind, an agent. And with the result that they put me in a solitary cell for 2 months, kept me very cold and very hungry, which is, I mean, we all do that if we want to try and get information from people. And in fact, this is time where I think being an artist paid off, you know, this is paid off extraordinarily well, because I used to do absolutely filthy drawings for the guards, and I used to get extra potatoes and things like that. This is one way to use, you know, practical painting.
And were the Germans particularly suspicious about any objects or materials that you found?
They couldn't believe that I was what I said I was, and they thought I must know a lot about everything. And they were particularly interested in this thing, in a new destroyer or convoy weapon called a Hedgehog. And I'd never been shipmates with a Hedgehog, but I did slightly know what it was. It fired a lot of bombs forward instead of aft, the way a depth charge works. And I'd never been shipped, I didn't know anything about them, but they were convinced that I did. And I was always being interrogated during this couple of months about this damned hedgehog, and at last I said, all right, I'll draw you one. And I drew a little picture of a prickly rodent, and I just packed off to myself very smartly. They didn't back that.
And so presumably you then just travelled across Germany and...
Yes, up to Berlin and on to Bremen. Vestertimke was the village, I think, where our camp was, which was Marlegeo. The Marleg prison camp was the only naval camp. There was only one naval camp. Because, you see, the Navy doesn't... The Army surrenders and gets caught. The RAF, four chaps, get shot down and get caught. But the Navy, generally speaking, doesn't. It either gets home or gets drowned. Mm. And so there were only, I think, I'm writing, give or take one or two, there were only 400 officers and 2,000 ratings in the camp, and that was the sum total of naval prisoners.
It wasn't officers and men camp?
Yeah, it was divided in the middle. There was a Marleg M was on one side, was I've got a diagram somewhere, and then there were the German officers in the middle, and the officers' huts the other side, so we were divided by the German officers in the middle. And we weren't allowed to work, of course. That's the customary of war. The officers weren't allowed to work, which we wished we could, because they used to have great fun going out and working on farms, and they'd get extra eggs and this kind of thing, the sailors. Mm. But we, of course, weren't allowed to.
And how soon were you able to start doing drawings?
Well, I had my materials. I was rather lucky, really, because the Swedish Red Cross used to supply art materials, and I was about the only chap in the camp who wanted them. So I got the full share, really. There was a couple of other artists that liked to use them, but I had the main share. And I even got oil paints and so on. And I felt, as it was really slightly my own fault, I'd been captured, I'd gone too far. I felt I must do something about this, my job, really. And so I tried to draw as much as I could.
Did you have any contact with the War Artists Committee at this time? Did you write to them or then to you?
I think I wrote, if I recall. I mean, they knew I was captured. I wrote to them, yes. But I must have written. But we were only allowed, one letter fortnight or something, and I'd probably send that home. Mm.
And were you invited to take part in escape attempts or provide...
Well, the usual thing, there was usually a tunnel going on being built, but this, I think, really, in our heart of hearts, we reckoned that tunnel digging was a sort of therapy. It was very unlikely that it would be a success, because there was an enormous ditch outside the wire, and this ditch was dug right down to water. So that in order to make your tunnel, you had to go under that as well, and which was almost impossible, because it was just wet. But we dug tunnels. But I did have this conception, and I think there's a film being made of it, which most people have heard of. The film is called Albert RN, which was a successful escape device where I made a dummy prisoner. And I think this was a case of the braggart having to fulfil his brag, because we were sitting... this is a long-winded one, but I'll have to tell you how it worked. Because every Thursday, we used to have, in groups of 40 or so, we were marched out of the camp to a shower about half a mile away, to a shower house. We got our weekly scrub. And this was the one time in the week when we were actually outside the camp. We had guards outside and that kind of thing, but of course we were carefully guarded. And we went up and had our scrub, fallen in outside, and marched back again. And we were sitting around and talking about this thing one evening, I think, and I said, I'll make a dummy, and we'll take it up in bits, leave the chap in the bathhouse, and march him back, you see. And of course, as I say, if you brag, you've got to do something about it. So, to proverbial long short story short, I made this dummy with the help of my chums. The head was entirely mine, but I had assistance with a man called Lieutenant Staines. He made a lot of the body and so on. And we drilled this. Of course, one must remember also that it's not a one man operation. This it's a you had tremendous cooperation from other chaps. In other words, whenever Albert, as we called him Albert, was there, other prisoners would be standing or trying to stand in between him and the guard, so he was always screened if you could make him so. And of course the drill was take him up there in pieces, up to the bathhouse, have our scrub. The escaper would hide in the lavatory at the bathhouse, and we'd assemble Albert. I one side, my friends Bob Staines on the other, and we marched him back to the camp. And indeed, we pulled it off, and the escaper disappeared. But that particular sequence for that escape was almost more fun later, because for 4 days we had to cover up this escape, and we were falling in for rappels, as they call them, early in the morning at 7 o'clock. We were falling on the parade ground to be counted, and then midday we were counted, and the evening we were counted. So there were 3 counts a day, and for 4 days we used Albert for this 3 counts a day, which was rather fun actually. We used to be falling in 5 ranks, and Albert and I and my chum were in the 4th rank because they counted in the front. They used to go fomp down in fives, and we reckoned that he was screened fairly well in the 4th rank at the back, and indeed we kept that up for 4 days so that this chap could get away.
Who was the escaper?
A man called Mews, Lieutenant Mews. He went to Australia, but there's a sad sequence to this. Albert had done his job, he'd escaped and so on, but he got up to Lubeck, this man, and he got into the docks, he got into 2 Swedish ships, and the captain of the Swedish ship wouldn't take him. And I haven't liked Swedes very much for that reason.
So he was recaptured.
He was recaptured by the Gestapo. He was very hungry, and he'd run out of all his, food that he'd kept and so on. But he was captured and brought back again. But they never believed that it had worked. They never knew actually.
And what was Albert made of? Plaster of Paris?
Newspapers, German newspapers in size. I built him up around a bag. I made a bag first of, I don't know, I forget, a sock or something. I built him up out of paper and papier-mâché. And I told you, we had this, I had the lion's share of the Swedish Red Cross paints. So I could paint him with oil paints. And it took a long time, but he was very realistic. There's a picture of him. I actually had a refinement inside his head, which I don't think really mattered a bit, but I had a salmon tin inside his head with a pendulum on it. It was a devious sort of thing. And as he walked along, the salmon tin would click round, and it had 2 nails in it. And as he came round, each nail would hit a little trigger, and he'd blink. Every now and then he'd blink, but I don't think it really mattered.
And what was Albert used for later?
We put him in dry dock for about a couple of months to let the Germans simmer down about the escape, because they didn't know it was him. Then another team used him, said they'd like to use him, and that was fine. And the day came, and off they went. With him in pieces up to the bathhouse. The escaper got into the lavatory to hide. They assembled Albert. They were counted. But I've always said that it was German bowels, not brains, that caught him, because one of the Germans, I suppose, had bad voice for breakfast or something, and he went into the lavatory and he found this prisoner ready to escape. He was dressed as a Polish washerwoman or something, I don't know, and pulled him out. And, of course, then they had one too many. Well, the boys were very good, the crew. They had a kerfuffle and they reassembled, they demolished Albert and got the bits. And when order was restored, they were all falling in again. The Germans had another count. Of course, they had it right this time. But they knew something was happening because they had this chap they'd just caught. So when they came back to the camp, they had a full-scale search. They didn't know what they were looking for, but they had a full-scale search of the bathhouse team party. And the Germans used to search 3 by 3. You know, we always march in threes. They'd take the three from the front, and the next three, and so on. And the last I saw of Albert was rather like Twickenham. His head was rolling out of the back of the scrum because he got smaller and smaller and tighter, and eventually nobody would own him. Mm-hmm. And his head went rolling out of the back. And that's really the last I saw of him. They picked him up and took him off with great glee. And then they said, oh, how stupid of you to imagine anything like that could work. And we said, yes, how stupid anything like that could work. But it had worked a couple of months before.
I wonder if you did any work sort of forging documents for
escape. I did quite a bit of that. We had quite a good forging department, actually. They used to make some beautiful typewritten letters with a pencil. Take hours, some of these chaps. But I did. We had an American Marine stunt man who was put into our jail, and he came in, he was full of bravado, and he said, I'm not going to stay in this game, I'm going to go, and so on. And the escape committee finally said, oh, well, if you're going to, he said, I'm going to cut my way through the wire. So he said, so we said, well, you mustn't do it without permission from the senior British officer, because this thing's got to be organized. And eventually he was given permission to one night that he could do this. But prior to this, his documents, once you'd been given permission, the forging department started on you, you producing your documents for and passes and all this stuff. And I made a photograph of him with a lead pencil. I worked on this for about 3 weeks. And I stuck a bit of cellophane over the top. And it really was quite good, actually. And it was in his pass, and it had a nice rubber stamp over it and the edge of the photograph. You know how a stamp goes. So one side is usually a bit harder than the other, and this kind of thing. It looked very realistic. It's fine, this photograph. And the great night came. There was an air raid, and so the perimeter lights went out, and he proceeded to cut his way through the wire. And he was caught about 100 yards outside the camp. And all this work on my photograph, he ate it. and all this work went down his gullet.
In fact, when you then got back to England, you had a whole batch of drawings.
Yes, I had them. I brought them back in a. We used to get the American Red Parcel, or Canadian Red Cross parcels. Used to have a thing called Klim Milk, which I think still sold in Canada. But it's a big tin. It's a tin with a diameter of 4 inches, 5 inches, I think. Like a squat tin, and this was a marvellous tin for metalwork. You could take the bottoms off, and I made, and you could join them together, and I made three big tubes of this stuff, and brought my drawings out in that. In fact, I don't know if it's in the picture of one of these rooms, I even made some, or my friend Staines, who did Albert with me also, we had a little stove in the corner, and it was jolly cold, we never had enough coal for it, and we reckon there's a lot being lost going out of the wall, and we made a Klim tin pipe that came up from this stove, and it went right round the room and out a hole on the other end, and by the time it got to the end there it was cold, and so it was a superb thing. You could dry your socks on it and your shirts and so on.
Central
heating. All made out of these Klim tins. I've got a photograph, incidentally, I can show you of my Klim tin case if you'd like to see it.
Yes, that'd be very good. This drawing is, in fact, of Guy Morgan.
That is Guy Morgan. Yes, he was the writer, or liaison officer, he's a journalist. And I say he was captured with me, and you can see his arm is in plaster there from the bullet wound.
And carrying a sort of whole collection of
personal possessions. Well, he was...